Renowned chef Elena Regan, self-taught, charismatic, and delightfully foul-mouthed, will tell us about her ascent in the culinary world with a past strewn with AA chips, jail cell stints, and brutal family losses. Her new book is Burn the Place. Regan is a self-taught chef. She is the founder and owner of the Michelin-starred New Gatherer restaurant Elizabeth, located in Chicago. Her cuisine highlights her Midwestern roots and the pure flavor of the often foraged ingredients of her upbringing. She is a James Beard Award winner and was named one of Food & Wine's Best New Chefs 2016. We welcome Elena Regan to the roundtable this morning. Elena, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
For a chef who has been described as the queen of Midwestern cuisine, how did you come to want to write a book such as this?
That's a good question. My degree is in writing, and I've been working in the restaurant industry since I was 15, and I'm 40 now. But so it wasn't completely out of my realm to want to write the book. However, I was approached by the editor shortly after an article came out about me called The Queen of Midwestern Cuisine, which had a little bit of background in history. It was a really nice feature, and he said, I think you have a lot to tell. You have a lot going on and a really rich background, and I think that it would make a really great memoir. Do you want to write one? And I said, okay, yeah, I'll give that a try.
So in giving it a try, were there specific things that you wanted to answer, to address, to look at, explore?
For me, it was just telling my story. I was just, writing the memoir, telling people about how I got to be where I was, what my childhood was like, how almost everything in my life really kind of built towards the moment of becoming a chef and really leading me to exactly where I am today, and just giving a background of what my life has been like, different struggles I've had. Just, I think putting out there what people tend to put out in a memoir, like, here's my story. And obviously I needed to connect it through food because that's how people know me, and that's what my career is, and that's what I'm passionate about.
You do write about your childhood and the life that you had on the farm. So tell us a little bit about your childhood and how it ultimately shaped you and how you wanted to address it in the memoir.
My childhood, I think, well, the farm in general was just so incredible. And there was, the way I describe it in the book is it just was a place to be able to like form many imaginations, just like very, you could go anywhere with creating stories about just some of the things that were around you. For example, in one of the stories that I tell, is about my family's restaurant that they owned for a long time before I was actually born. And we had all of that restaurant furniture in our barn attic because it was closed by the time I was born. And so, being 4 years old and walking around the barn and seeing all this old dusty tables and chairs and stoves and things like that, everything was kind of mysterious to a degree, from my dad butchering animals to the restaurant equipment to the cornfields and the fruits and vegetables and us collecting wild things and me saying like, well, what else can we eat that's out here? My dad and I went foraging a lot for mushrooms on my grandfather's farm, which was sort of gothic and beautiful in its own right. And we would collect mushrooms there in the spring, the fall, during the summer months, just whatever we could get, morels in the spring, chanterelles in the summer, hen of the woods in the fall. Our own farm had meadow mushrooms growing out on the grass. We had hazelnuts in the front yard, and elderberries and crab apples, but also, you know, trees that were purposefully planted, cherries and peaches and apple. And so we were always, my mom was always canning and preserving, and we were always eating things fresh from the garden. So, you know, that seasonality was something I really tried to get across, because when you're learning that from an early age, because you're immersed in it, and if you're interested in that and love eating, which I did, it just, you know, it just was a thing of magic.
You write in the first part of the book, confusion about sexuality wasn't the only reason alcohol was so pleasing to me. I was certainly born with the allergy, as we call it in AA. Talk a little bit about how the two are linked for you, and then ultimately how you were able to realize it, and as you write in the second part of the book, have come to terms with it.
Yes, I mean, growing up, I think for many people in the early 80s or even now in rural areas where, you know, not necessarily exposed to a lot of different lifestyles, it may be very heteronormative relationships. And so I was certainly confused about my gender and, you know, at an early age, it's strange to say my sexuality, but I guess that, you know, that was confusing as well. And for me, being a shy person and introverted, and which I go through some of that in the book, alcohol was very, you know, as most people know, you take alcohol and you loosen up a little bit. And so that the sexuality and the alcoholism aren't necessarily linked together, but drinking alcohol allowed me to feel comfortable in a time when I really just wasn't feeling comfortable about anything. So that is the link there. And as that goes on, just in my early 20s and I really start to become a heavy drinker. Well, actually, I was a heavy drinker from the beginning, so I really... And I had alcoholism in my family, so I understood what alcoholics were and what that looked like. But, it became something that was very much a part of my story and something that I wanted to tell people, because I think it's important to understand.
So. And becoming sober, I mean, came to you in a... this was something that you realized, but it was also through trauma as well.
Yeah, I mean, I had many different moments that one could say, oh, this is definitely your bottom, that a normal person or my family or somebody on the outside would look at me and say, well, don't you think you should stop drinking now, you know? But in my experience, it was when I was 30 years old and I got to this point and nothing extremely terrible happened, not like some of the other instances I had described in the book, but I just got to a point where it was like, okay, I don't want to feel this way anymore. And I had learned over the years of going in and out of recovery that there was this thing that people said in AA is you never have to feel this way again. You know, we often say that to somebody who's new, and that stuck with me over all the years. And so when I was finally having my first kind of, or my last moments with alcohol, thinking I can't do this anymore, that kept going through my head. It's like, yeah, I don't ever want to feel this way again. So that was my bottom. It didn't look like a jail cell. It didn't look like some of the other instances I had described in the book. It was just this moment where I was thinking, I want to feel better. So that ultimately, though, really helped me change my life. I mean, I was already working towards my restaurants and my goals before then, but that helped me focus, because when I was, you know, trying to manage drinking or, you know, hangovers or staying sober, that was actually a lot of work. And when I could, you know, just work on staying sober and working and focusing, I was really able to accomplish a lot. But, you know, it wasn't to become successful. That wasn't the reason that I ultimately quit drinking. That was just because no matter what, I wanted to find out what a better life would be, and I didn't want to keep going on living the way I was. So I don't know. I hope I'm describing that correctly for you.
Oh, I think you are. But it does free you in the sense that you said to focus, but to be able to focus on the career, on the business, and the food. And it allows you to become and achieve what you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that if I had gone back to drinking at any point, or even if it's still out there for me, you know, like as we talk about in AA, it's just a day at a time. But the thing is like, if I were to return to that kind of life and lifestyle, I have no doubt in my mind that everything I have would be gone. But I think another big part of the book for me and what I try to explain to people is, you know, regardless of everything that I've built for myself, more important to me is my character. If I had nothing else left, I want to at least be happy with who I am or what I'm doing. And I think that that's a big part of Burn the Place. And so we go through that part in the beginning where I'm literally burning the restaurant. And then we find at the end that that's not even close to something I actually want to do. But the truth is what I'm trying to figure out. I think I'm at this point in my life that, you know, balance and as I have written a chapter called The Things That Matter, so family, trying to really figure out how to manage that, because having a career like I have, whether for others in the restaurant industry or not, just having a small business, is in making that successful is extremely hard work, and 24 hours, 7 days a week. That's what the job is. It's all the time. And I would like to figure out how to maintain what I love doing, which is cooking and hospitality. But maybe, you know, someday as I get a little bit older, maybe within the next 5 years, figure out how that can fit my lifestyle a little bit more. So I can have more time to focus on friends and family and my partner and my dogs and eventually have a children ourselves. So,
well, the book is beautiful. It is Burn the Place, a memoir. It is published by Midway. Elena Regan, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Burn the Place, a memoir, published by Midway. Written by Elena Regan. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.